Has Florida State done enough to hit that 8-win mark in 2025? That's what we're going to debate today. How confident are we in each position group that they can get Florida State to where they want to be this season? Now, as we always have to say on the show, Michael, 8 wins is not where we want to be as a program. But there seems to be that general consensus that an 8-5 season would be enough showing that Florida State has picked itself up off the mat after last season and is kind of moving in the right direction. So we're going to stick with that 8-win mark, right? We're not going to go up to 10 or anything like that. Maybe we'll throw that in the conversation a little bit. But what we're really going to be talking about today is meeting that 8-win mark and the confidence we have in each position group to get us there. So that's what we're going to talk about for the most part today. We also got a little bit of baseball to tack on to the end. Florida State goes out west to take on Cal after a big series win over Clemson. And then we have a surprise segment that I'm going to throw in there. I didn't even tell Michael about, but I think you guys are going to enjoy it as well. So excited to get into this one, finding some more stuff to talk about with football season as we are inching closely to that upcoming season, that season opener against Alabama. Can't wait for the season to get going. But before we do that, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, Jesse. Thanks for having me. Good to be back on the show and another episode. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, we talk about the climb a lot with Florida State. And so, yeah, 8 wins is not the standard. But, you know, we're just trying to make a climb, you know, out of, you know, we only won, I think, 2 games last year. So we're just trying to climb that ladder back up and trying to figure out, can this team get us to 8 wins?
Yeah, you know, it kind of feels like when you're climbing, like Mike Norvell took over a fixer-upper when he got here, and maybe when they were remodeling, someone just forgot to put a step or two in there. We were doing good going up the steps, and then we just, whoops.
Just fell.
Fell through the floor into the basement, and now we're starting to climb back over again. But
that's right.
You know, again, like we said, man, 8 wins is not where we want to be, but I think an 8-win season, depending on how it looks, could be acceptable for right now to get you back headed in that right direction, because they really just need some positive momentum.
Correct.
And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we get into that, guys, if you enjoy Plant the Spear in our content, I normally say this for the end of the episode, but we are less than 10 subscribers away from hitting 2,000. So that would be massive if you guys could help push us over that limit. You guys are as much of this part of the show as we are. So we appreciate you guys getting us to this mark. Again, we are less than 10 away from hitting 2,000. So tell a friend, tell a neighbor, rate and review on the podcast. We are almost there. We appreciate you guys for tuning in. And so let's jump into it, Michael. So this was a game, we're going to treat it kind of like a game to have some fun with. And this is one that you brought to my attention. And so we kind of came up with some rules and things that we're going to format the show with here. And so, Michael, I'm going to give you this statement, right? Okay. This is what we're going to base the show off of. This position group, blank position group, is good enough to get Florida State to 8 wins in 2025. This position group is good enough to get Florida State to 8 wins in 2025. That's the statement to keep in mind as we go through this.
Okay.
And how we're going to do this is we're going to base our confidence in these position groups individually on a scale of 1 through 5.
Okay.
Now, I can't read you the original ways we came up with this, what each number meant, because we're a family-friendly show. But we'll start with 5 being the most confident. I'm confident they can.
Okay. Okay.
That's number 5. 4 means I think they can.
Okay.
3 means they probably should, because let's be honest, we don't know how these are going to look until we see them on the field.
Correct.
So this is like summertime, I think they can.
Okay.
Number 2 is I doubt they can.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't see it happening, but I'm not saying it's impossible.
Right.
Number 1 is I'm not confident they will.
Yeah.
So, you know, the original way was 1, that ain't happening.
That ain't happening.
Number 2, that might happen. Number 3, it could happen. Number 4, I believe it could happen, but I ain't betting on it.
Yeah.
Number 5, sell the farm. We're putting all the money on the dollar.
Exactly.
So that's how it's going to go. So obviously 5 is the most confident, 1 is the least confident. And so obviously we're just going to kind of go through each position group, starting with offense. And we will start with the second most important, because, you know, me and Michael on this show, we're different. We always say quarterback is important, but offensive line, nothing works without the big dudes up front.
That's right. We're
going to start with the second most important position group here on the field. And what we also decided to do, instead of going back and forth, which we're gonna expand on our selection, right? In each position group, we're gonna expand on why we feel that way, but we're gonna kind of show our confidence level at the same time. So there's no chance to adjust. It's gonna be complete surprise. I have no idea what Michael's picking. He has no idea what I'm picking. So we're gonna start with quarterback here, and we'll go on three. Okay, on quarterback. So how confident are we that this quarterback room? And keep in mind, guys. Let me just say this real quick, Michael. This is encompassing your starter.
That's right.
The entire depth, because, you know, you could probably say one number for your starter, and then you could probably give another number when you have to consider all the depth.
Right.
So this is all encompassing now.
Yeah. This is a composite score.
Exactly. So starting with quarterback on three, Michael, 1, 2, 3, what you got? Oh, you're a little more confident.
I'm a little bit more confident than you are.
You're a little bit more confident than me. Now I have three.
Okay.
And I will be honest with you. I actually had four, and I changed it to three at the last minute. Okay. I did. Okay. So my thing with quarterback, right, the reason I'm at three is I'm fairly confident that Thomas Castellanos can get us to eight wins, right? When I look at his career, he took a less talented Boston College team to 7-5 his very first year as a starter. Yep. Now, they went 7-6, but he technically didn't start the first game against Northern Illinois, which they lost. And he actually did beat out Emmett Moorhead, who had a really good closing to the 2022 season, to take the starting job from him. You know, 2024 was a really kind of down year for him as far as a quarterback goes. They lost a bunch of games. He got benched and moved on. But again, different system, different coach. Things just weren't jiving there with Bill O'Brien. Obviously, there were some comments when he left. Doesn't sound like that relationship was good at all. But I will say, when you look at that 2023, that was his first season as a full-time starter. He's even said in interviews, he's kind of just running around making things happen. I think he's gotten better since then. They had an easier schedule than FSU has in 2025. They played three ranked teams that year. They lost two. And then the one they won was SMU in the bowl game with a backup quarterback because their quarterback had broken his leg.
Right.
So I'm just looking at, like, man, if he can lead a worse Boston College team to 7-5, well, then he should be able to lead a better Florida State team, even against a little bit harder schedule, to at least 7-8 wins, right? Now, the reason I dropped it from a 4 to a 3 is because you have a small, undersized quarterback who's going to be asked to run a lot, and if he has to miss any time, I'm just not confident in what you have behind him. Brock Glenn has some years in the system. He's got some experience. He played a good bit last year. But, man, it was like, who is this guy versus Clemson? And then it was like, who is this guy versus Duke? And it was That's for two different reasons, right? And so, like, I haven't seen enough from Brock Glenn to consistently believe. A lot of this is timing, too, right? Like, if Brock has to go play UVA or something like that, yeah, I think Brock can get you a win there. If Brock has to go beat Miami or go beat Clemson on the road, I'm not confident he can do that. And then even if you have to go farther down there to Kevin Sperry, I think Kevin Sperry is going to be great in the future, but he's a true freshman right now. Yeah. So I would put just Thomas Castellanos at a 4, but because of the rest of the room, I'm going to drop it to a 3.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could totally see why you did that. The reason why I have him at a 4 is not necessarily because of them, but more so because of the system they're going to be in. Yeah. Now, listen, Mike Norvell is a Gus Malzahn disciple, okay? Like, his offense has been built on the principles of the Gus Malzahn offense. But last year, they were required to try to throw the ball more because they had a pedestrian, and that's being kind, offensive line where they
that
could
pedestrian,
not.
Yeah. That pedestrian got hit by a bus. So.
Exactly. And ran into some brick walls. I mean, like, they could not block to save their life. They couldn't run the ball for anything. Well, Gus Malzahn has a history of having top 10 running offenses, right? And so when you have a predominant where 60% of your play call is going to be run, all you're worried about where the quarterback is really checking them into the right protection for that run or the right run blocking scheme for that, right? And only 40% of the time are you going to have to, like, check the protection to throw or do that. And when they throw, a lot of times Gus Malzahn likes to have that quarterback on the move as they're throwing. So that's why I have it as a 4, because TC, Thomas Castellanos, led BC, a lesser talented school, to 7 wins. Now, he's going to have, not to our fan standard of talent, but he's going to have better talent than he's ever played with his entire college football career, right?
Yeah.
Then I go to Brock Glenn, if you're going down the depth, and Brock Glenn was at his best when he didn't, when the offense wasn't predicated on him. So go back to where he had to come in, I think, towards the end of the Florida game in 2023, the ACC championship game. He couldn't throw the ball to save his life, but he could call that one play. He could give him the right blocking scheme, so yeah, he could do it. And Gus Malzahn is really excited about what Kevin Sperry brings to the room, that if for some just unlucky amount of reason you had to get down to him, I think Gus is comfortable putting the offense in his hands as far as making sure they're in the right checks and all of those things. That, to me, I have more confidence in the system than necessarily in the player. So that's why I give it a 4.
That's a really good point, because again, this is something where we talked about, you know, we've said this 100 times on the show, where even then, like, you look back to Auburn and you took a converted DB and led them to a national championship. So it's not a really quarterback dependent system. So I'm pretty confident that they can.
Yep.
I would put this almost like a 3.5 more than anything. It's just like, man, I love Brock Glenn as a player. It's just, if we have to go past Thomas Castellanos, that confidence drops to a lot, right? I would almost put the starter at 4, and if you don't have Castellanos, I would put it at a 2. But that's where I'm at. But I'm confident that Castellanos can get us there. So let's go to the next group here, and that is going to be running back. Now, I will say this as we go through these, Florida State did get 2 new commits over the past week that we have not talked about yet. So we will include them when we get to their position group. So just keep that in mind as well. So running back, confidence level on 3, Michael. 1, 2, and 3. Okay, well, we're opposite on
now,
this one.
Now, I need you to notice there's an asterisk by that. So I'll explain that when I get to my time.
Okay, all right. So I'll go first here, and I'll let you go first on wide receiver. So for me, I will say this. I actually was with you on a 3, right? Mm-hmm. Prior to them signing Gavin Sawchuk.
Yep.
He is the one that puts me to a 4, because I think if he is healthy, because the reason, and we'll talk about this in a second, the reason his production dropped so much in 2024 is because he was dealing with an injury. I don't 100% know what it is. I think it was a thigh or groin or something like that. So it was obviously, I believe it was a leg injury, which is, of course, devastating to a running back. If he is healthy and fully ready to go, I think he's going to be your day one starter. So really, to me, he makes the difference. He bumps you from a 3 to a 4, because without Sawchuk, I had this as a 3 that was not a confident 3, right? Now, let's talk about Gavin Sawchuk for a second here. We'll start on that and why I'm confident. So in 2022, he was behind a 1,000-yard rusher who was a really good running back for Oklahoma. Yep. But he did start the bowl because their starting running back opted out. If you remember correctly, he played against Florida State in the Cheez-It Bowl. So he played against us. We got to watch him firsthand. And he put up over 100 rushing yards and a touchdown against a pretty good FSU defense.
Right.
If my memory serves me correct, they also had maybe two offensive linemen out in that game. One of them, I believe, was an All-American who just sat out of the bowl to get ready for the draft. I think they may have had 2. So you were behind a depleted offensive line, stepping into your first real start of the season. You went up and you put 100 yards and a touchdown against a solid FSU defense. So then 2023 was his best year. Only started 7 games, but he still managed to put up around 750 yards. And out of his 7 starts, Michael, he had 5 100-plus yard games.
Yeah.
All against Power 4 teams. Maybe not great Power 4 teams, but all against Power 4 teams. Averaged 6.2 yards per carry, 9 touchdowns, added another 94 yards receiving. I mean, this is your home run hitter. This is who you brought in, right? The home run hitter had a flat tire last year, so you're hoping that you're hoping he's back. Because 2024, again, he dealt with injury, only had 39 carries all season for 128 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, Oklahoma brought in Jay Knott from Cal. That's why he hit the portal, because they brought in a guaranteed starter day one. And so I think this is a good pickup, man. Now, when you look at the rest of the room here, I think you finally got your home run hitter. Because remember, if you think back, my thing with this was, it was never about the depth. It was always about having that number one top guy in the running back room. I always felt good about your depth. I just didn't think you had that special guy in the running back room. You know, and the thing is, truthfully, man, I don't entirely know what to make of the rest of the room because we've only seen most of them behind a terrible offensive line.
That's right.
Could Keziah Holmes be good? Could Roydell Williams be good? Could Sam Singleton be good? They all have some years under them. They're all, you know, semi-experienced backs. They're all solid. Cam Davis should take a step this year, and I think Kroma will be special as a freshman.
Yep.
So I like the depth you have, but like I said, I had worried about the top end. Now I think you solved that by bringing in Gavin Sawchuk. That's why I go from a 3 to a 4. If he misses time, you lose that top end potential unless it becomes the freshman there, or they're just that much better behind a better offensive line. But the thing is, for me, it doesn't seem like there's a massive drop-off in talent behind Sawchuk because they're all pretty much just average college backs, except for Kroma, who's a true freshman that wasn't here in spring. So I would have kept you at a 3, but I'm giving you a 4 because of Sawchuk. But I actually, this is one of the areas, one of the position groups that I'm, without Sawchuk, I'm not super excited about, but I'm actually the most confident in the depth of that they have. I don't feel like there's a big drop-off. It's just there's not anything real special besides Kroma and Sawchuk. But that's why, because you signed him, if he's healthy and ready to go, I give you a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to take one of your points, one of your factors in why you gave it a 4, and I'm actually going to elevate that to the top. And that was the asterisk that I put there. I think it's hard for me to really know what we have in this room until we know what we have in the O-line. Because there's no position group more dependent upon. I mean, the quarterback is dependent upon the O-line, obviously, to protect him. But he can move. He can throw the ball. He can get rid of it. The running back is basically, once he's got the ball, everybody's gunning. And so the running backs are so dependent on having a competent O-line. Now, I know you can make the argument, well, Dalvin Cook didn't have an O-line. Well, but Dalvin Cook is like the second coming of Emmett. I don't want to say that one. Of Barry Sanders, okay? Right. Like, I mean, Dalvin Cook was just unworldly and insanely talented. We don't have a Dalvin Cook in that backfield right now. So to me, it's hard to know what this room could be. I know a lot of people came out of spring really feeling like the running back room was nothing special. Well, of course it was nothing special. Most of the O-line was hurt, right? So they couldn't see what they could actually do. So I actually put that's the number one factor is why I have this as a 3, which is they probably should, but I just don't know what the O-line is going to be like. Then I think from that point, you get into the questions of, yes, is Galvin going to be healthy? Because if he's healthy, I mean, he ripped apart Florida State's defense last 2 years ago in the Cheez-It Bowl, for sure. Which version of Wardell Williams are we going to get? Are we going to get the one where he was actually dynamic at Alabama? Or are we going to get the what we saw last year? And again, that's predicated on the offensive line, right?
Yep.
What about Kroma? Is Kroma everything we're believing they're saying he should be? What about Cam Davis? Is he actually a fit anymore for this offense? I mean, he was one of the best highly touted recruits that came in under Mike Norvell, and I don't know, last year left a lot to be desired too. And it wasn't just the O-line with Davis. I mean, he had fumbling issues. He couldn't read the track well to get to the hole in the spots. And then you have questions about Singleton and Holmes and Parks and Jeremiah Johnson. You know, are those just backups? Are they just there for depth? Or are they going to be factored into this, into kind of the competition of that room? So I think for me, it's like they probably can or probably should. I just don't know. There's too many question marks about this room.
Yeah, I think for me, if I give them a 4, it's based on you having like an average college football offensive line, right? But you know, again, like you said, man, if that offensive line plays like they did last year, that could bring this group down, and it's not their fault, right?
It's not their fault, right?
But that could bring this group down to a 1 or a 2. It just depends on what that offensive line does. But if you had an average offensive line, if you could like separate the two, then I definitely give this a 4.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I don't think Roydell Williams is bad, but there's probably also a reason that, you know, most of his yardage came against South Florida at Alabama because Ia Holmes has never really been able to find the field. There's some question marks here, but I think you have enough pieces that could get you to 8 wins here.
Yeah.
8 wins based on what you do. And again, it's like you said with the system too, man. This is a really heavily system based on running backs. Yeah. So you're gonna need those running backs. That's gonna be like, if you had to weight these out, I mean, that's a really heavy portion of what this offense is gonna be able to do. So the next thing over here is to the wide receivers. Now we'll go at the same time, and then I'll let you go with your explanation first.
Okay.
All right. So on 3, 1, 2, 3. We both went with a three. I like it. So we're on the same page for this one. All right, I'll let you go first on this one.
Okay, so the reason why I went with a three here is because, yes, you went out and got, you know, Deuce Robinson. You went out and got Squirrel Wright from Tennessee. You went out and you brought in the Boggs kid from the high school ranks. You went out and you got Gavin Blackwell, who literally, I think, most of the receivers had more receiving yards and receptions than he has in his entire career. So you went out and got some depth, and you went out and got some supposed playmakers. The issue I have is, what does that look like in a Gus Malzahn? This is probably the negative part of the system. What does that look like in a Gus Malzahn offense? Are these guys going to stay focused the entire season? Now, typically in a Gus Malzahn offense, he likes to single in on 1 to 2 wide receivers who are going to get the bulk of the catches, the bulk of the targets in that. Because again, this is a 60-40 offense. It's 60 run, 40 pass, you know, and that's going to ebb and flow depending on the game plan and how the game goes. But it's basically going to be 60-40. So that 40% of throws that are happening, that 40% is really in historical Gus Malzahn faction is divvied up between two at most and sometimes a third wide receiver. So if it's going to be Deuce and it's going to be Squirrel and it's going to be somebody else, maybe the Jalen kid, the gadget guy.
Jalen Lucas.
Yeah, Jalen Lucas, who's technically a running back, but basically is like a slot receiver as well.
Right.
H-back coming out of that. Are they going to be able to stay like focused on that? And then another thing is, this offense is predicated on the wide receivers being able to block. And Jesse, what was one of the number one things I complained about last season?
Yeah, having little guys blocking.
Having little guys blocking these big old corners and these big safeties and these linebackers, right? And so is Deuce Robinson going to be up for the task of getting underneath and blocking and using his feet and driving back when he's not catching a lot of balls all the time? Is he going to be the number one target? How many deep shots are we going to try to take per the year? These are things that I haven't seen at Florida State yet. And so it's hard for me to be like, well, yeah, I mean, they come in, they're really talented, they've got production, but I don't know how that's going to fit here. So I think they probably should right, help Florida State get to 8 wins. I just don't know.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you, right? My thing is, so I'm confident in the top guys like Deuce Robinson, Squirrel White, and Jalen Lucas, who, again, like you said, is kind of a gadget guy. You could throw him in the running backs there. We didn't mention him there. I think he's going to fill in a lot of your slot receiver this year. I like the guys behind him, LaWayne McCoy, BJ Gibson, Elijah Moore, even, you know, Gavin Blackwell, which is the other guy that we talked about. I mean, this is probably going to be a depth piece, probably really to replace Jalen Brown, 5'11", 185, comes over from UNC. 450 yards, 1 touchdown in 3 years at UNC. Now, UNC did have some stud wide receivers ahead of him, but, you know, you've had some NFL quarterbacks there and you really couldn't produce. So I don't know how that's not going to be as impactful as maybe the other Gavin, but I am confident in those, that top layer. That second layer, I like those guys, right? I'm confident in the top layer. I like the second layer, but they're still young and unproven. And you know, I think Javon Boggs is a guy who's probably might be your starting slot receiver. Yeah. And so that tells you kind of if a freshman's coming in and going to start at your slot, potentially, we don't know that, but that tells you kind of where the rest of the room is.
Right.
The reason that I dropped this down, and let me start with the positives here. Like, I really think with what you get having a 6'6" guy in Deuce Robinson, you got your size, you got your grow up and get a guy. I think Squirrel White, to me, is one of the most important aspects of the offseason. I think he's your X factor. I might be higher on Squirrel White than anybody else. If he's healthy, that's what we're talking about here. You nailed it. Because he had over 800 yards in Tennessee at 2023 with pretty decent quarterback play. And then a step back to around 400 yards last year when you had not so great quarterback play and he was injured. So can he fall somewhere in between? Can he be a 600-yard receiver for you?
Yeah.
Will he be 800? Will he surpass that? The system has to be factored into that, too. So I like the variance of skill sets you have. I like the versatility of these guys. I like the speed that you have. I like the size that you have. I think there's a lot of talent underneath them and guys that I thought should have played more last year, like LaWayne McCoy and Elijah Moore. But again, if you were to lose any of those top two guys for any period of time, this probably drops to a 2 for me because I like those guys. I'm just not confident in That's those right. other guys quite yet because I haven't seen it yet. And the last thing I'll say on the wide receiver position is because of, like you said, with the scheme where you don't necessarily need the wide receivers to be great to win eight games in a Gus Malzahn offense. I think they're good enough to do that. They probably can. I think they can. I do think they can. I would almost give this to a four. But one of the reasons that I also made it from a four to a three is just because of quarterback limitations, right? Like, I think Thomas Castellanos is probably a better passer than some people think he is.
Yeah.
But he's not Jordan Travis. He's not a great throwing quarterback. So I am going to limit the wide receivers to a three because you also have to factor that into.
Yeah, no, I think that's I agree with that. I think the points that you gave are valid. I mean, yes, Castellanos got better, but you have to also think about the system that he had play in under Bill O'Brien, which is more of a drop back passing quarterback system where they gave him limited reads and it was quick throws, really. It was a lot of quick throws. So yeah, of course his accuracy is gonna go up. But if my concern is if he has to sit in the pocket and actually read the defense, change the defense with his eyes before taking off, then yeah, I think you're going to see maybe a little bit of regression in his completion percentage because you saw that when he was in a similar type of offense prior to Bill O'Brien getting there. And so I do think that actually hinders the wide receivers a little bit more than that as well too. And then let's not also forget that while Deuce Robinson was a productive wide receiver, it wasn't like he was lighting the scoreboard or the football field up at USC. And he played with, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner, you know, he played with Miller Moss. Like when they were, you know, Miller Moss is a pretty decent quarterback. So he still wasn't lighting it all up. So I think that also gives us a little bit of pause to say, okay, he's good. He's productive. But what does that look like in this set offense and this scheme?
Yeah, for sure. On paper, I definitely think they can, you know, and when you talk about the quarterback position, you know, it's kind of like the O-line to the running backs, right?
That's right.
You know, you think back to Jordan Travis against Pitt whenever he didn't have Johnny Wilson or Keon Coleman, and he went out and threw for the most yards he had thrown for all season. A good quarterback can make an average receiver great, right?
Right.
Look great. But a bad quarterback can make a good receiver look terrible.
Yep.
And so, like, again, Thomas Castellanos, remember, what do I always say when I bring up Thomas Castellanos? Name one Boston College wide receiver besides Zay Flowers who left before he got there.
That's right.
He didn't have anybody like Squire White to throw to. He didn't have anyone like Deuce Robinson to throw to. But at the same time, like you said, man, if his passing has not always been great. You know, so that's the one thing that I worry about there. So let's go. But I like this group. Like I said, I do. I think the potential in this group is very high. It's just, can they stay healthy and can they live up to that? Because, man, I mean, you could see LaWayne McCoy, Elijah Moore. You could see any one of them having a breakout year, too.
Absolutely.
I could also see that. Now, let's go on to tight end here and we will do our rating.
Wait. Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're changing a little bit here.
Yeah, I had a last second change.
Okay, all right. On three. One, two, three. Okay, look, all right. So we're even on the last two. I'm glad we were different on the first one, so we weren't all equal here. So looking at the tight end, man, for me, I go with a four because I think Randy Pittman, who's a name that we kind of forget about, is a nice versatile addition similar to a Jaheim Bell, right? He gives you that Swiss Army knife at the tight end position who can kind of work out of different positions. I think if Landon Thomas is even better than what we saw last year, he's already a plus player.
That's
so you know, with a bad quarterback situation and a bad offensive line, he was still a bright spot on that team last year. So if he gets any little bit better, and that's you would imagine he would because he was a true freshman last year, that's a plus player. Amari Williams could also be a factor here. It just depends on his, you know, snap count distribution because he is going back to the defensive line, his natural position this year. But he's a plus player for you too. Chase Lofton sounds like he can contribute as a freshman after a solid camp. Honestly, I don't expect a lot from Biscuit because, you know, there was that couple minutes there where he was back in the portal, which means they may have pushed him towards the portal or he wasn't going to play. Then he withdrew. Now he's back. But he's there. He's big and he has experience. I think because of the way tight end is like, you hope you can get a good bit out of it, but it's not like your most important position group. I think for what you need out of the tight ends to get you to eight wins, I think you have enough pieces to be able to do that. You know, you have a little bit of a blocker there. You have a versatile guy, and then you have a couple of pass catchers. So I think you have a good skill set here at the tight end room. I'll give that a four.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree too. The reason so what I originally had this as was a three, but if I could go with like points, it would have been like a 3.7. And then I just remembered, oh, Biscuit came back. And here's why I give this edge with Biscuit to four. Because yes, Biscuit left Florida State for a hot minute, then came back, and then came back again. Okay. But Biscuit is probably your best blocking tight end that you got in that roster. Now, that depends on how they leverage Pittman and how much Thomas has improved. But Biscuit, you know already, even though he's slimmed down a little bit, he still is one of your best blocking tight ends. And, man, I remember several plays where it was like they did like an off tight end T approach. They had the tight end in the H-back position, and somehow he slips through the linebacker and he's wide open in the end zone. I'm like, and that's Biscuit. I remember the one time where he caught a ball and basically like dribbled between his legs without letting it touch his ground to catch that touchdown pass. You remember that one?
They probably thought he was an offensive lineman when he was here before because he's so big. That's a legal man downfield. We ain't got to cover him. Touchdown.
That's what I'm saying. And so like, I think he gives you that kind of added weapon to that. I think Amari Williams, depending on his snap count, is another factor in the tight end room. Of course, my boy Landon Thomas, I think he's going to get even better. You saw glimpses of that his freshman year. I think you're going to see even more. And then, of course, Randy Pittman, who is, like you said, is the second coming of Jaheim Bell. You know, we don't know if he'll have the same production as Jaheim Bell had early on in the season before he got injured. But if he could have similar for the whole season, well, that already gives you a plus adage on being able to leverage that tight end in different ways, especially with Thomas Castellanos being on the rollout and on the move and stuff, getting the ball to him. Now you got, you know, a guy that you can do so many cool different things with. Of course, your GT counter, your GY counter is going to be very important for that tight end to be able to get into there. So for me, it moved it up from a three because I was like unsure about it. But when I actually start more thinking about it, I'm like, oh no, I think they can help Florida State get to eight wins.
Yeah. And, you know, just looking back at Randy Pittman, he put up 416 yards last year at UCF. And that's, man, if you can get 400 yards out of a tight end, that's all you really need. Looking at Landon Thomas here, 6'4", 239. So he's probably added some mass to that frame to help with his blocking there as well. Markeeson Douglas, 6'5", 270.
Yep.
Redshirt senior. So, yeah, I think you got enough there at the tight end room to get you to eight wins. So let's get to the important one, the big one, Michael. Offensive line, the hog mollies up front. Because, you know, man, if this doesn't get you to eight wins, the rest of it ain't going to get you to eight wins.
Yeah.
So this is the one that really counts. And so we will go on this one on three. One, two, three. We both got a three. You got a lot of asterisks over there, but we both went with a three on this. Okay, so here's where I'm at with this offensive line, Michael. So I think the starting five, if you could, like we always joke with NCAA 25, if you could go in the settings and turn off injuries, I would give the starting five a four. I think they can, right? I am very confident in the starting five that you have. If you lose any of the starting five, especially at center, I think it drops to a two for me. There is a lot of veteran experience in that starting five. However, with the exception of Micah Pettis, you're kind of getting the best parts from bad teams, right? You got Luke Pettibon from Wake Forest, not a good team, but he was a great center. You got the guy from Vanderbilt, not a great team, Gunnar Hansen there. He was good on kind of a not-so-great team there. Richie Leonard was one of the better linemen on a not-so-great Florida team and then played, you know, was decent for you last year until he got injured. You know, and then you just look at the guys that you brought in. The guy from UCF, obviously, I think, you know, they went 4-8 last year, but he was part of some of the 9-win teams that they had there at UCF. So for me, I think you're starting five, I give a three or four. But what concerns me the most is, you know, how does it look when you combine the best parts from bad teams?
Yeah.
And I'm concerned about the depth because there isn't much experience behind them. Those guys, the young guys, are going to need to get reps early in the season to be ready in case something happens. Like, yeah, you're going to want to roll that starting five versus Alabama for sure. You probably want to give them a good bit of snaps the first half against East Texas A&M because, you know, it's a continuity builder. But, man, I think the second half and almost all of Kent State, you need to almost roll with your backup offensive line after the first quarter because you need to start building some depth because you did go out. And I like the additions that they made in the portal in the spring. There's not a whole lot of experience that you brought in there.
Nope.
a lot of the pieces that you're looking at to be your backups this year, you know, I like an Andre Otto. He looked pretty good last year as a freshman.
Yep.
But there were some ups and downs there. Lucas Simmons, a guy who I have a really, really high hopes for, never really touched the field. So to me, if you get past that first five, man, my confidence meter falls off a cliff. But I do think if for the most part you can stay healthy, man, I would give your starter. This is why, like, this is the average, the sum of all parts, right? That's what we talked about before, where I would give your starting five a four. I would give your backups a two. So I'm going to meet in the middle with a three.
Yeah, I know we're just rating position groups here, but if we had to rate the whole offense, I would tell you that my rating of the whole offense is predicated on the sustainability of this offensive line.
Yeah,
because we have seen, I mean, gosh, if Florida State fans know something, the one thing we know is that when you have a terrible offensive line, you might as well forget it. You just might as well forget it. It's just,
and this offense is desperately relying on this offensive line.
So you have new faces and you have new schemes. Can those new faces gel in time? Can that starting five gel in time? Can the new coach bringing in a new blocking scheme, you know, not so different than what they've done, but basically new with new calls and new everything of that nature. Can Herb Hand get them to do the job, right? Can they do that job well? Can this starting five gel in time to be successful? And can we not like switch people? Can we just play with this starting five and keep them the same the whole time? Right. Yeah. I think that's a huge question mark. To me, to go off of your point, if it's just a starting five, it's a 4.5 for sure. But you got to look at the depth. For me, I know you said for you, it would drop down to a two. I don't want to be negative, but if you got to go to the backups outside of maybe Andre Otto and maybe, you know, who am I thinking of? You know, a Jacob Rizzi who's played a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a Estes who's kind of played a little bit. Lucas Simmons. If you had to go outside of that, though, this is a one. This is bad because there has been no development. We talked about this earlier. There's been no development. The coaching's been piss poor for them, right? And so, like, I just be really worried if you're, like, having to go to these deep backups here, which hopefully you don't have to. So that gives me concern there. And then my last thing why this is a three is because it's not just the depth I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the talent development of the depth, like I just said. Like, I just worry that if you have to actually go past that, now you're bringing in guys into these game situations who've not had the experience, who've not had the time or necessarily the right, or maybe not right, but maybe the best coaching to have them prep for that situation.
Yeah.
So if it's just the starting five and they, for some great reason, are able to stay healthy the whole season, then I feel confident that they should be able to help get them to eight wins. But if anybody starts going down with injury and they're missing multiple games, it gets real dicey after that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And that's why I said I also think center is such a big part of it, because with Pettibon there, you have a veteran presence who can help get guys lined up, make the right calls. If it's a young guy in, you know, maybe even look at the Vanderbilt kid who's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Has a year of development that you could put in. You know, and that's a guy who could snap the ball. You know, if Pettibon's out, I'm worried that you can even snap the daggone ball.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing there too. So, yeah, but no, I like the starting five. It just depends. And I'm confident in Herb Hand. I think he's going to be a great offensive line coach based on, you know, what he's done with his time with Gus Malzahn. They put together great rushing offense, so I think it'll be good. I mean, anything's better than Atkins, but you're talking about relying on an Atkins recruit, that makes me nervous too. Last year's offensive line, if we were retroactively grading, would have been a negative five. I know the hell they can't is what I would have said.
So true.
That's what I would have said about last year's offensive line. So as long as we can get to a three, I think we'll be good.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier. I thought we should have just went to playing 7-on-7 last
year.
Screw the offensive line. It
would have been so much better.
Exactly. All right. So, and if you guys are watching along and enjoying us, having fun, drop what your grades would be in the comments. It would be fun to see if you guys disagree, you think we're crazy, where you're at. I would love to see it. As we get ready to flip over to the defense here, drop your grades in the comments and let us know what you guys think. All right. So, Michael, let's see. Let's go over to the defense. I'm just trying to keep track of our grades here. So we had to do this one where we broke this in defensive tackle and defensive end, because it's really kind of almost two different position groups when you look at this Florida State roster. And so we will start with defensive tackle here. That will be the first position that we're going to talk about. So, Michael, on three, if you got your score ready, 1, 2, and 3. Oh, our first two comes out. All right, I have a 3.
Okay.
It's a nervous 3. Maybe I should have went. Maybe I should have went 2. But I will say why I got a 3 here, and I'll let you go first on defensive end. So for me, the reason I have it as a 3 is because you can run a 3-4, right? Yep. And I think if you only need one defensive tackle on the field at all times, you're okay. If you go to an even front, I drop to a 2 immediately. And that's because of the depth. Man, I might even go with a 2 here. But here's the thing with the defensive tackle position. I like Daryl Jackson.
Yep.
Daryl Jackson's ceiling is ridiculously high. 6'5", 330 or something like that. Just crazy amount of size. He's a veteran. He's got multiple seasons under his, you know, under his belt. We've heard about how dominant he is in practice, even though that's probably because the offensive line was so bad. But we've never really seen him be consistently dominant yet in a game situation. You know, every time he's played, he really kind of got passed up by Daniel Lyons for most of the season last year. And then he started looking good towards the end of the year. So your bell cow on this defensive line is a guy who's kind of been inconsistent, has all the tools in the world, but, you know, just doesn't do a great job of using them. But I think it's there, man. I think the ceiling is high. If Daryl Jackson has a year, right, if he has a great year living up to his potential, I think this is easily a 3 because I think he can be a disruptor. I really like Daniel Lyons. I thought Daniel Lyons was one of your, you know, one of your obviously top 3 defensive tackles last year, maybe top 2 as a young guy who was just getting experience. And so I think, you know, you got those two that are going to be your starters. Now, it does kind of set you back a little bit that Daniel Lyons was hurt and missed most of spring. So that's not ideal. But then who do you got after that? You got KJ Sampson, who did not play a lot last year. I think he played just north of 100 snaps. Not a whole lot of experience. We heard some good things in spring, but not a lot. And then you got Kevin Wynn.
Right.
Other than that, you got, what do we say, Tylan Coleman, who's an incoming, he's a JUCO guy.
JUCO.
Man, and then who do we say, Jamori Flagg?
Jamori Flagg.
Which probably hands water to the rest of the defensive tackles. Like, there's just not enough there, man. Yeah. Like, if you go to an even front and your next group is KJ Sampson and Kevin Wynn, who's a true freshman, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I just don't, man. If you're talking about getting to 8 wins, now, if you want to get to 6 wins, sure, maybe. If you want to get to 10 wins, I'd no chance. But, man, because the reason I worry about this, because, man, if you lose one guy, one of your two starters, I think you're in trouble. And this is honestly my biggest concern with this entire 2025 Florida State football team is depth at defensive tackle. Because remember, in 2022, when you lost Fabian Lovett in the LSU game, you couldn't stop squat up the middle, and you got ran all over. And that's half the reason you lost that Wake Forest game. We thought it was going to be just Sam Hartman slinging all over you. No, they just ran the ball straight up the gut, and you couldn't stop them. So the portal is not over yet, but I'm very disappointed that they did not go out and get a defensive tackle in the portal. And maybe they add one before the season, and maybe that changes. But right now, man, this is my least confident position is defensive tackle. And it's simply because of depth. I like Kevin Wynn. I like Daryl Jackson. I like Daniel Lyons. And I think KJ Sampson can be decent. But, man, that's just doesn't feel like a lot over a 12-game season.
Yeah, I would agree, man. This is one of I just do not feel very confident. And it has nothing to do with the people in the room necessarily. Like, I think Daryl Jackson, again, to your point, he's better. I mean, you saw what he's becoming towards the end of the season. You know, they even said that their biggest recruiting win was getting Daryl Jackson back for another year. So yeah, like, he's better. But what my top two concerns about this position group is, one, Daryl Jackson's motor and consistency. Can he be a consistent force on that middle front every single game, regardless if you're going, you know, one front or you're going two front there? Can he be consistent? Because if he is not consistent, I don't know who in the world is coming behind him to actually make a difference. Yeah, you can throw a body in there to, you know, be a body, but is it actually going to make a difference? That is my number one concern. I too, not to be negative, but I too share the disappointment that Florida State did not go after, well, they probably did. They did not secure the signing and talents of some defensive tackle in the portal. Again, the portal's not over, but my goodness, this can't be it.
Right.
This is Florida State.
You
got six of them on the roster, and you like, this is what you're going to depend on going into the season? No, that to me gives me a very low confidence. Now, Daryl Jackson could be great and he could like play all season and play most of the snaps and be, but right now, if you're asking me, am I confident that this position group can get Florida State to 8 wins? I would say I doubt they can because of depth and consistency.
Yeah. In a 3-man front, I'll give them a 3. In a 4-man front, I drop that to a 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And so let's go with the defensive ends here, the compadres to the defensive tackles. We have a ton of them, so maybe our grades should change there a little bit. All right, Michael, you ready?
Okay.
1, 2, 3. Oh, man, you're hating this defensive line.
I just do not. I'm telling you, Jesse, the depth concerns me greatly. It concerns me greatly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. On the defensive end group, it's a lot like the defensive tackles, right? I think it's – I worry about the depth more than anything. Yep. And the other thing that I do worry about, man, and this is just me thinking out loud here, is, like, first off, we're counting on James Williams to be the guy, right? But he has only ever been a depth/package guy.
Thank you.
You're counting on Jason Jenkins, who is injured right now, not be able to even, like, depending on the extent of the injury, might not even be able to work out. So then he's got to get back in football shape, got to get strength back, all that stuff by early point in the season. That's the only injury we've heard that's supposed to really maybe drag on into the fall. You're relying on him to be your guy. Man, he didn't hardly play a whole lot of Tennessee. Now, granted, it was a stacked defensive line. Everybody feels good about who he was as a depth piece there.
Right.
But then, like, really behind that, I mean, who do you got, man? You don't have a whole lot of experience at the defensive end group. And now you got guys that I like, the Deontay McRae, the Diggs kid. You got all them, the Desir twins. You got a lot of those guys. But the thing for me, and I'm even excited about a Jaden Jones, who is a guy that I thought could have done good coming out of JUCO.
Yeah.
But again, man, what concerns me is that, you know, when you looked at Jermaine Johnson when he came in, you were like, all right, I know he's a backup of Georgia, but when you see him, you're like, it's different.
Different kind of backup.
Right. When you see Jared Verse come in, he was dominant at Albany, right? And so the pieces that we're relying on now either were situational depth guys or they were good at the G5 level, and that can be real hit or miss. So I like the defensive end group. We don't have any proven Jared Verses out there, right? We don't have a lot of depth. So that's why I go with the 3. They probably should be able to, but we're going to need them to be hits, right?
Yes.
And if you have one miss between Williams and the other kid that I mentioned from Tennessee, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. My question is this. Do we have any Jared Verses, or do we have a bunch of Marvin Jones Jr.?
Yeah, I think you might be almost even like somewhere in the middle. Like maybe you got a couple of Keir Thomases.
Okay. But see, I'd be okay with that. One I'd be okay because he actually produced, you know, for the most part, he produced. But like, I'm not sure if James Williams, who was a decent backup at Nebraska, I'm not sure if he comes to Florida State and he's maybe a Keir Thomas. Okay, let's go Keir Thomas. Or is he a Marvin Jones Jr.? He got all the hype, but then really it was like, what is this, you know?
Yeah.
And we just have no depth behind these guys. So if one of them goes down, right? If DeMonte Digg goes down, if James Williams goes down, now we're depending on true freshmen who, yes, they're highly rated recruits. So don't get me wrong there. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of potential, but we have no production after that. Like it scares me, you know, playing this. And yes, I know we're playing a 3-man front. And so you need those 2 DNs, even if you play a 4-man front, but you know, Mike Norvell in the previous iteration, they love to rotate that line. It'd be interesting to see what Tony White and Pat Roast and them want to do with this line now moving forward. But if they're going to still try to rotate, I mean, I'm assuming then they're going to be trying to get those freshmen in. And so hopefully, you know, those 2 games that you have sandwiched between Alabama and I think of Virginia, that you can get a lot of them in and get a lot of reps in them. But man, this whole D line, especially the tackles and the end, it just gives me concern that I cannot feel confident. I'm not saying that I'm confident they can't help Florida State.
Right.
I just don't think they can. So that's why there are two for me.
Yeah. I think the thing for me with this defensive end group is, like, if everything goes well, I think it could be great, right? Yeah. Like, I think James Williams could be that guy. I think the Tennessee transfer, the Jones or mm-hmm. whatever, could he
Jake
could
Jones,
be,
yeah.
He could be that guy. I think some of the freshmen could be great. We just don't know it yet, right? It's just hard to be confident in something you haven't seen. Like, none of these guys have been full-time starters unless it was at the G5 level. And so, like, that's the only thing for me. So, I hope it works out, because the defensive line would have been, you know, a dominant group if you could have maybe – you see the difference it made to have a dominant group. I would have liked to have seen them add one defensive end and one to maybe two defensive tackles in the spring portal session. So, there's still time out there to add. But if they don't, man, then yeah, I'm a little concerned about that. Now, let's move on to linebackers here. Now, Michael, this one probably going to surprise you a little bit here. All right, are you ready?
Yes.
One, two, three. Hey! We got our first five on the board. All right. So I'll start us off here because we got a five on the board. So I obviously have to justify that, especially when the heck you're talking about a Florida State linebacker group. My goodness. You better be confident.
So we on that one.
Or you might be smoking some. Who knows? Yeah, it's weird to say, isn't it? Like, it's wild. It's so weird to say, man. I just feel like, now, the one thing that makes me nervous about putting up a five is because we are primarily going to be running three linebackers.
Right.
If this was a 4-2-5, I'd have no doubt at giving it a five.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Easily.
I worry about you being able to get all three linebackers on there.
Yep.
But, man, I just really think Elijah Herring is going to be that anchor in the middle of your defense. I think he's going to be the best linebacker. Well, let me rephrase that. I think he's going to be like another Tatum Bethune for you, right? Mm. This is a guy that led Tennessee in tackles, the Volunteers, led them in tackles, then transferred to Memphis, led them in tackles, and so he's transferring to Florida State, now might lead us in tackles. It's more than likely. I think he's a great centerpiece for this defense. I think, you know, you also have guys like Blake Nicholson, who got a lot of experience last year. Look, it's time, Blake. It's either put up or shut up time. You know, he was a very blue chip linebacker off the West Coast. It's about time that he steps into it. But I think he looked good enough last year that, man, I feel good about him. I also like who you have here in Justin Cryer. I think that was, you know, he was showing a little bit last year before he got hurt. Omar Graham, never thought I'd say this, but, it, you know, in the first part of last season, he got a one, and I was ready to throw him into the portal. At the end of the last season, I gave him a four, and I was ready to pull him back out of the portal, and they did. They got him out of the portal. So I think if Omar Graham plays like he did at the end of last year, I feel good about this. You know, I also like Caleb LaValle. He's probably going to be more of a depth piece this year, missed spring with injury, but that's a young guy building for the future. The one that I really just can't call, man, is Stephon Thompson, right?
That's
the one that I just don't know, because he was with Tony White at Syracuse. Yep. He was a starter there. Then he went to Nebraska. He was not a starter at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Why was that? Was he just not that good? Was he just not better than what they had? But I also look at it like this, man. If that guy, a redshirt senior with a lot of experience, is someone that you would consider LB3 or LB4, you're in a heck of a lot better situation than you've been in the past few years, where we were using like walk-on linebackers and stuff like that. So, man, I feel good about this linebacker group, and that's the first time I've been able to say that. Well, other than 2023 in quite a while.
You know, Jesse, you in 2023, you made famous on Plant the Spear, the saying. We used to pray for times like these.
Yeah.
I know. We used to say that so much. And, man, we used to pray for times like these.
Yeah.
That we're actually talking positive about a Florida State linebacking corps. Now, don't get me wrong. This ain't 2013 linebacking corps. No. This ain't the 90s linebacking corps, right? This ain't even the early 2000s, mid-2000s linebacking corps. But this is very 2023-esque linebacking, where you feel a sense of safety and confidence that they're not going to be in the wrong place.
Right.
That they're going to make the tackle. They're not going to like jack up somebody like those old school Florida State linebackers would, where you're like, oh gosh, you don't want to face them. But like, you're like, they're going to be in the right place. They're going to read the right hole, and they're going to get where they need to get, and they're going to make the tackle. That's all we need. Right. And you're just like, so I just feel so good. I've not felt this good about a Florida State linebacker core, you know, since 23. And then since probably mid 2000s, you know, Omar Graham, my goodness. Yes, I was same way. I wanted him gone, and now the boy has proven himself. He's been consistent. He's gotten better. You've seen the consistent growth in him. Obviously, Blake Nicholson, it's time. I said it last year. You got it. Let's get it done. I think Justin Cryer showed a lot of improvement as well. And then I like the young people you got behind. I do think getting Elijah Herring out of the portal was one of the biggest wins. Yep. Maybe second to getting Daryl Jackson back was getting Elijah Herring. That was huge for the defense there. And then I think, some of the young guys, Ethan Pritchard, Kalen LaValle, I think some of those guys are going to Jaden Parrish. And what's his name? The other guy. What am I thinking of? AJ
Cottrell.
Cottrell. Yeah, I think so. Some of these, he's a redshirt junior, but I think him getting better over time, I think you have good depth there as well. And then, I think Stephon Thompson is like the quagmire. It's like, what is he going to be? Is he going to actually be able to do something? And in this 3-3, it's important that those linebackers are leveraging such weight. They're going to switch him out. And so maybe he can find himself as like a specialist, either on a passing down, they bring him in because he's better defending the pass, or maybe he's a better run defender, so they bring him down on the run defense. So it'll be curious to see how they handle that. But I actually feel a four. I think they can help Florida State get to 8 wins.
Yeah, and I do wonder if maybe you don't have Thompson out there as your starter, at least for Alabama, because he's got 3 years in Tony White's defense. This is the guy who's probably wearing the green dot, right?
Yeah.
Because he's so familiar with the defense, he can make the calls. So, yeah, man, I mean, again, like you said, man, this ain't the good Marvin Jones. This ain't Derek Brooks. This ain't these guys. But when we're talking about in context of getting to 8 wins in 2025, I feel very confident that these linebackers can handle that. Handle that task. So crazy times, man, but I like it. So now let's talk about the secondary, and we're going to do this in cornerback and safety because it's kind of two different things to talk about here. So with the cornerbacks, man, let's go with our grade. Are you ready? On 3, 1, 2, and 3. All right. We both got a 4 on that one. So I'll let you start on this one.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, I think this starts right at the head man himself, Patrick Surtain. I've had a lot of confidence and faith in Patrick Surtain since he's been at Florida State. His the corners have played well. They've covered ground. They play the man to man really well. Adam Fuller was a big man to man principal. And so this is going to be a little bit different because the 3-3-5 stack plays a little bit more zone coverage. And so he's got a bunch of corners that are great at man to man and maybe a little bit suspect on zone coverage things, right? And so it's kind of one of the reasons why they went out and got a Jeremiah Wilson, who had played in a 3-3-5 before, and it's because he has a little bit more familiarity with that type of defense. But I don't think it was because they didn't think they'd had anybody in that cornerback room that could play. I think they just felt like we needed a little bit more veteran presence who's had experience in this room that we can put on a corner and know that we can put him against whoever's best wide receiver and be okay. And like, okay, that's it. He shut that side of the field off. Now we can actually focus and leverage some of our boxing principles, some of our cover end principles there in that sense as well. But I feel confident in the guys that you got in that room. I had a list of who I thought could cover take on the other day, but I think you're gonna see the Jabril. I think you're gonna see some of him as well. Obviously Conrad Hussey comes back. I know Jones is in the mix for some of that as well too. So I think they feel good about the guys that they can put on the corners there to play that zone defense, and so I feel confident that they could help Florida State get to 8 wins.
Yeah, I think this is one where you give like the Patrick Surtain bump, right? Yep. Like, I think because it's just such a well-coached group that's done good in the past that you got to give them a little bump.
Yep.
Now, I don't think it's always been super great.
No.
There's been some holes, especially at the safety position. But I think Jeremiah Wilson changed this for me from a 3 to a 4. If you had not brought in Jeremiah Wilson, I would have had this as a 3. But because of him, I give it a 4. Because, again, you got a guy who played 1 year in Tony White's defense, so he's familiar with the scheme. He's familiar with what they're going to ask him to do. The rest of the group is young and talented. I want to make that clear, but they do lack a lot of experience. Like, I think the potential to be really good is there.
Yeah.
It's just we got to see them do it on the field. However, I will say that a good bit of them did see action last year. Jabril Rawls played 137 snaps. Edwin Joseph played 180, and Quindarius Jones played 256 snaps. So you have three choices right there, and that's not counting other guys like Kai Bates and you know, Charles Lester and all those guys that could certainly make an impact and get on the field. But if you can let Jeremiah Wilson lock down one side of the field, like we talked about, like Ophentrell Cypress did in the past, and you can get one other guy out of those three to five guys, man, I just think there's so much talent there and enough experience that they can be serviceable right out of the gate that I'm confident that this cornerback group can do enough, right? Yep. Now, the one thing that worries me the most is your defensive line going to be able to get enough pressure to be able to help out the secondary? You know, that's one thing. But that's where James Williams comes in there. Now, moving on to safety. Safety is the next position group we're going to do here. And confidence level on 3, 1, 2, and 3. We both got it at a 3. Man, we started off different. Now we're agreeing on everyone. For me, the reason I go with a 3 here, right, is because what the heck is Shaheem Brown going to be this year? You know what I mean? Like, if you had 2022 Shaheem Brown or 2023 Shaheem Brown, I'd be like, all right, give me a 4.
Yep.
What if you get 2024 Shaheem Brown?
Then that's right.
It might be a 2 because it just wasn't good. And that's your defensive leader of this secondary. But KJ Kirkland did play 434 snaps last year, which was a lot more than I thought when I went and looked it up. I think he's a very viable option at that number 2 safety position. Of course, the transfer they just brought in is a redshirt freshman, so I don't think he's going to be necessarily a factor there. But Conrad Hussey, that's a love-hate relationship. That was my guy. That was one of my impact players. And then I was ready to impact his butt onto the portal after last year. But 190 snaps. Ashlyn Barker is a guy who's got great size for a safety, 135 snaps. And then Earl Little Jr. played 179 snaps last year. So, you know, you're going to have to find a couple other guys to go next to Shaheem Brown in this 3-3-5. I think if you get a good year out of Shaheem, I feel pretty good with KJ Kirkland. Who's going to be the other guy? And then, you know, what is Shaheem going to be, man? But it's not that I'm not confident in safety. I just, man, a lot of this depends on the year Shaheem has.
Yeah. I mean, you've said pretty much what I was going to say with this. This is why I have a 3. It's just because it's really predicated on Shaheem. Like, which version of him do we get? I mean, the Shaheem that was downhill, just smacking people left to right, sending them back to 1947, you know, like, or are we going to get the Shaheem that just gets, you know, that loose to a play and you watch him get blocked out, that Boston College play where he runs to the wrong hole and he just basically gets pushed out of the way and he's like, you know, like, are we going to get the Shaheem, or are we going to get like the dog Shaheem? Like, that really is it. If we get the dog Shaheem, this is a 4, 4.5 maybe. If we get the Shaheem, then this is what it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so the last thing, but I mean, I think as a unit, they'll be good. It just depends, man. Yeah. I just hope he has a bounce back year. But I like the pieces that you got back there. I also do worry a little bit about depth once you get past, you know, maybe a couple of them. Because even then, you know, a couple of these guys maybe aren't quite super highly touted guys. But I mean, even then, Conrad Hussey was a guy who flashed in as a freshman, and then we just didn't see it last year. So if you can hit on all these parts, you'll be good. And so the last thing we're going to throw out here is special teams. I got to include this because they were our two best players last year and we lost both of them. So I think we have to give our rating on this one. And so on 3, 1, 2, and 3, I'm going with a 3-2. So we agreed on basically the back half here on most of them. For me, man, real quick, special teams ain't got to make a whole lot out of it. First off, anytime that you have John Papusius as your special teams coordinator, it's an automatic plus because that man is a wizard. He can figure out how to block a kick like nobody else. And special teams is all encompassing. It is not kicking field goals. But you do have a new kicker and a new punter. Jake Weinberg was really good coming out of high school, but he has not kicked or not more than a couple times in college. So that's something that you just can't predict. Kickers are a wild card. Obviously, you can't predict that. You got a new punter who is replacing a guy who should have run the Guy Award last year. That's going to be hard to replace. But, you know, all encompassing, I think Weinberg's good. He's been here for a year, so he's kind of got some time to develop that leg and learn under Fitzgerald there. But I also think the return game will be a little better this year too, right? You got some guys back there. Mekhi Danzy is a guy that we saw take one back for, or Sam Singleton or whoever it was, took one back against Duke. Squirrel White's an excellent returner as well. I don't know if I would risk that.
Yeah, me either.
But if you want to, I think you have the potential pieces there. So give me a three only because you got a new kicker or punter. But, man, I think special teams would be okay with JP, the return game, all encompassing. I think the special teams would be okay. Hopefully, yeah, you don't have to rely on them as heavily this year. Hopefully, yeah, these aren't your two best players on the freaking team.
Yeah, if JP wasn't coaching this again, if he was gone or just they had changed it out, this probably would have been a one for me just because – it's so unknown. It's so, you know, we've gotten used to the type of special teams play that Mike Norvell, I mean, they have whole periods in their football practice for special teams. I mean, he puts a lot of emphasis on this. And of course, like you said, JP is a wizard when it comes to this stuff. He's going to find a way once, at least once or twice a year, to block a kick, yep, extra point, punt, something somewhere. And so, yeah, I think that's it. And then of course, the reason why it's a three is just because the unknown, like, yeah, Jake Weinberg, you know, he came out of high school with one of the strongest legs, in the last 20 years of college football from a kicker. So I think that is a plus. But what I've also heard is that it's also one of the wildest legs too. Yeah. So, like, it's not as accurate as what, you know, because you remember when Fitz got started, he was wild and not as strong. And over time, he got more accurate and he got stronger. Whereas this one, you have wild and strong. So, you know, it's kind of almost a reverse action there. So, and I know they brought in the number one kicker behind that too, I believe.
Yeah. Kicker slash punter.
So I think just trying to see how that develops there again, and games like Clemson, maybe Alabama, maybe Miami, where kicking is probably going to come into play. You know, this is where it gives me a little concern that we don't know as well, because they're all young, but also you have a lot of trust in JP.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that's it, guys. That's going to do it for the position groups here. It feels like we're pretty confident in most areas, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's some areas where we have some concern, right?
That's right.
And I definitely, you know, we were talking about this before. Like, I made all my cards ahead of time and I didn't even put a one out because I don't feel like this team has anywhere where it is just a glaring weakness, right? But I do feel like they don't have a lot of areas that are just exponential strengths.
Yeah.
And again, this is in the context of getting to 8 wins. Now, if you ask the same question, how confident do I think these position groups are that could get to 10 wins? A lot of those numbers are probably going to be cut in half, right?
Yeah.
Because at 8 wins, you beat all the teams that you were supposed to beat.
Yep.
You know, you beat an NC State and then you lost all 4 of the tough games, or maybe you lost NC State. You upset one of those teams, which I think will happen. I do think you upset one of the 4 this year, Miami, Florida, Clemson, Alabama. I think you upset at least one of those, maybe more, but you know, we'll see how it all comes together. If they go and add another defensive tackle and a defensive end from the portal, because again, the portal, it's not open, but there's still players in it.
Yeah.
Then I would feel a little more confident about where they're at. But man, when you talk about getting to 8 wins, if this team can stay healthy, I feel pretty good about it. Where I get concerned is when you start to get into the depth. But I don't think, when I look across this roster, Michael, I don't really see anywhere that's like, man, that is a absolute we're screwed. That's a boat anchor for this team.
Yeah. No, I don't either right now. Let me just put it there.
Right now,
I don't see anything that's like, oh gosh, that's going to be the death of Florida State right there this season. Now, I think the Alabama game will give us a better view of this team that we might need to reassess at that point. But as of right now, I don't see anything that says this is not good. I'm not saying I see anything that's like, oh yeah, over the top, let's go all the way. Yeah. But I definitely see a lot of in between that. And I think I can live with the in between as long as it's progressing throughout the summer and especially in that fall camp.
Yeah. It's kind of like I said with the 2023 team, right? Like, you had basically your baseline level was really good. And then you had a couple of greats. Yeah.
Right.
A Jordan, a Keon, a Verse, a Fisk. I think this year is more just like it's just a big collection of good, right? Just good college football players, but there's not a lot of great in there. And so you're hoping that a widespread collection of good that plays hard and everybody pulls in the right directions, they fix the intangible things, can get you to that 8-win mark and build that momentum. And then maybe they surprise, right? Yep. Maybe they go a little bit over or under there. So that's going to be it for that portion. 2 quick things to talk about before we get out of here. We got a couple minutes on baseball and then a surprise topic that I told you that I was going to save for later in the show that I didn't even tell Michael about. Michael, we have to do our part in the great internet debate of the question that is burning up the internet right now. This is the most popular question in the world right now. Michael, 100 men, 1 gorilla.
Come on now.
Who do we got in this one? And I have a theory about this, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
if you're talking about like 100 just straight out of math class, none against the math guys, you know, 5'9", 160. Oh, you're getting shredded like a paper shred. Just shoom, 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 shoom. He's just breaking them in half and throwing them out to the side. I think you're done. The 99 of you are going to be dead in the first 5 minutes. But man, I looked it up. A silverback gorilla is anywhere from about 5 to 6 foot tall, weighing in around 400 pounds. I think you got to break this 100 up, right? I think if you get about 50 NFL offensive linemen, right? Oof, 6 foot six, 350 pounds, runs a 4-something 40, benches 400 pounds. You got some strength there, right? Yep. About the same size as the gorilla. Now, gorilla's going to be way stronger than them. So he's going to be snapping necks and cashing checks here. That's definitely going to happen. But the stamina is going to eventually run out. So I think you get about 50 of those guys in there to really just kind of hone them in and wear them down. Then I think you need about 20 quick guys, like a John Jones, a UFC fighter.
Okay.
You know, something like that, that can come in here and just wear the gorilla down, right?
Okay.
So now we're about 70. And then I think probably your last 30, you know, you just need some real finisher guys. Like give me some Mike Tysons in there or something. Someone that can just punch it out with the gorilla. I think if you just go with 100 straight up regular, like I saw you in Walmart last week, man, you're getting destroyed. But I think if you take the best of the best, right, from the planet, you get some NFL offensive linemen, some UFC fighters, man, I think 100 of them could take one gorilla. Now, about 60 of you probably going to be really regretting signing up for this. But if our life depended on it, I think 100 of the right type of men could take that gorilla.
Oh, this is great. I just love this topic. I really do. Because I've been seeing a whole bunch of this stuff online.
It's burning
the internet up. Here's my theory, okay? I think in totality, 100 men could beat one silverback gorilla. But here's how I would do it. Kind of like you, I would break the numbers up. The first 25, peace be with you. You were a sacrifice.
You're done. Yep.
Like you were sent to just get the initial energy out. Because a silverback gorilla, they're not killing because they're like scared. They're killing because that's their instinct. They're going to like come at you, right? So the first 25, peace be with you. Praise be. Okay. You were a sacrifice. The next 50 is what is going to actually weaken the gorilla. Okay. Like as he's tired and everyone's pulling at his neck and punching his arms and punching him in the, you know, the other places and cause you ain't got no weapon. So it's just all fists and kicking and stuff. Yeah. Right. And somebody's trying to snap his neck. He's going to wear down. And as he rips through, cause he's going to be ripping body parts.
Oh, for sure. Just arms and legs flying everywhere.
You got ducking arms and stuff. As he rips through that next 50, that final 25 comes in and gets him to the ground. I think once you can get him to the ground, then whoever's left of the first of that 50, that second 50 and that final 25 can then get him there, get him down, choke him, all the things to figure it out. By the time it's done, I think you might have maybe 20 men left.
Yeah, it's not going to be a lot. And I'm going to need at least maybe about 4 or 5 like Rey Mysterio type of guys where you can just like tush push him up to the gorilla's shoulders and he can just start poking eyes out and give him the old fish hook in the cheek or something like that. Yes. You're going to have to take some risk, right? You're going to have to take some risk. But I think 100 average men, like 100 of me, oh, I'm getting the floor wiped with me, that's for sure. But
yes, I think 100 of me is not a question. It's over.
If I had my choice of 100 of any of the men in the world, I'm going to get some rugby players and stuff like that.
Get some Marines. Yes,
exactly. Yes. So we have solved the debate that the internet is wondering about. So I just thought that would be a fun few minute topic to throw in there because it has been all the rage on the internet there. So let us know if you think 100 men, one gorilla. Let us know in the comments. Last thing, as we close this episode out, baseball heads out west for a series against Cal. Cal is not a great team, 19-27 on the season. Florida State should get the series win in this one, probably even a series sweep, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
That's a long trip. So, you know, as long as you get the series win, you'll be all right. This is coming off a great series win against Clemson, number 3 Clemson at that time. The only thing that worries me, Michael, is like I was telling you before the show, Clemson has lost 6 of the past 7 games. They lost to NC State, got swept the weekend before they played Florida State. After the Florida State series, they went and lost to Coastal Carolina in a midweek. I know it's just a midweek. Man, Clemson's a little bit reeling. So who is this team? You know, that's the thing that we're trying to figure out. It's like Florida State, they look great. Then they run into Wake Forest, and they get exposed a little bit there against Wake Forest. Then you sweep Virginia Tech, a ranked Virginia Tech team. Things look like they're back humming. Then you go to Louisville, and you get game one in grand fashion, and then you get your butt whipped in the next two.
Yeah.
And you lose the series, and then you come back against Clemson. So it's like, man, who is this team? And I think when you talk about this baseball team, man, the offense has been great. Like, it's been a lot better than I expected. The pitching is still a little bit hit or miss.
Yeah.
I just feel like, man, this is a team that, like, on the one hand, they could probably beat any team in the country.
Yeah.
Really, toe-to-toe, they can in one game, they could beat any team in the country. But, man, then they can lose some head-scratchers and in grand fashion, like run rule fashion. And so it's just trying to kind of find that consistency, and this is where it's going to start counting, right? Because you got Cal. Then you finish the regular season with number four, North Carolina. Now, thankfully, you get him at home.
That's
then you
right.
jump into the ACC tournament, which you're at the top of the conference right now. So you should hopefully, if you beat Cal and you do good against UNC, you should get that double bye, or at least a single bye. But you should get that double bye there. And so you should save some of your arms and stuff there of wear and tear throughout the ACC championship. And then hopefully you can host a regional. But, man, it's one of them where you're going to have to be consistent, because now it's starting to count. But this is a – man, this is a really good team. Number two in the country. It's going great. I mean, I can't say a whole lot. I just want them to find some consistency because, again, man, like things – you know, you can't have – when you get into the postseason, you can't have those Wake Forest, those Louisville type of weekends. You need those Clemson, those Virginia Tech type of weekends. So, man, but I'm excited to see two more series left in the regular season. Then we get into the ACC championship tournament. But, man, Florida State baseball, number two in the country as they head out to take on Cal.
Yeah, I have a little gripe with the pollsters out there, because how Texas going to get swept and stay number one? And
yeah, Florida State,
because they're in the SEC. Florida State beats the number three team in the country, takes the series, and they just move up to two. I mean, it's whatever. Listen, I was super proud of Florida State for getting that win. I thought that Clemson series win was more about exercising demons than anything else, based off what happened last year when they went up to Clemson and all that chicanery and foolery that happened around that time and all the witchcraft, I'm pretty sure it was. So I was really proud of them for that. They could have swept the series had it not been for the rain out at the end there. You still saw some of the signs about the bullpen. Woof. They give you concern. Like you said before the show, man, they could beat anybody, but they could lose to anybody. And so it'd be interesting to see how they play out. Obviously, I think that North Carolina series is going to be big. It's probably the last best team you're going to play that actually has been a little bit more consistent. And what I will also say, too, to Florida State, maybe in defense of Florida State baseball, is that when you look around the country, none of the top 10 teams have been juggernauts. Like, you know, I mean, you remember one year where, I mean, gosh, Arkansas and Tennessee, they looked unbeatable. But this year, you hadn't seen that. And so I think every single team is kind of dealing with some different things, which is creating an issue on consistency. So if Florida State can figure out how to put this together and get as consistent as possible, I think they have a long shot. I think they have a shot to go a long way in the postseason tournament there. So I'm excited to see how if they can stack on what they've done with Cal and Jacksonville with Clemson and Jacksonville, now go out and play Cal. They should walk away with a series sweep.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I think last year when you look at like what Tennessee did, it doesn't really look like there's a lot of juggernauts this year, right? I mean, Texas, again, number one, just got swept. They've lost some games. LSU's another good team. But, I mean, even Tennessee's fallen all the way to 15.
Yeah.
You know, Clemson has fallen all the way to 9. They've lost some games. They've been swept. I mean, baseball's a crazy game, right? It happens. But it doesn't look like there's a juggernaut out there that's just unbeatable like maybe Tennessee was last year. So I definitely think, you know, that if they can be consistent when it counts, maybe you even get Cam Leiter back. I saw Connor Holtz is supposed to be coming back as well. I'm not confident there. But, man, this team could make a run, and so we'll see. But now's when it counts, man. You got to get this Cal series, and you got to make a good showing against UNC. And then at least the one thing I will say, the last year I feel like the ACC tournament kind of wore you down a little bit going into the postseason. But I do feel like maybe with this year, the different format that it is, it's single elimination, no more pool play, and Florida State, if they finish strong, they can get a double bye. I think that's going to set you up for some momentum going into the postseason. So that's going to end it for us today, guys. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed this. Drop your position rankings. Drop your thoughts on the 100 men versus one gorilla in there. Let us know what you think about baseball. We appreciate you guys. If you enjoy this episode, drop a like and subscribe. Again, we are less than 10 away from hitting 2,000. That would be a big thing for us to hit there. We appreciate you guys. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans as well. As always, plantthespear.com is our website where you can check out everything from written articles, which I've been slack about, but I'm going to get get back to it and our podcast episode as well. But we appreciate you guys watching. And as always, we'll see you on the next one. Go Noles.
Go Noles.